Are you ready?
Oh, yeah!
Let me tell you something, brother. If you're looking for the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be in the podcasting universe, then look no further than Ring the Bell, bringing you the best in the world at what we do. And what we do is take over the world of wrestling reviews, baby. Now, ring the bell.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Ring the Bell. And before you start thinking, wait a minute, I thought our next show was coming on Saturday. Don't panic, dear listener, because this coming weekend, you will still get part one of our Takerilogy, our trilogy of The Undertaker, his look at his career. That is coming. But today, and whenever you listen to this, you're getting a bonus episode because this past Sunday, the WWE presented Survivor Series 2020, and we are here to talk all about it, plus a little bit of what happened the night after on Monday Night Raw. But I hear you ask, who are the we that I've just mentioned? Well, I, of course, am host Andrew, you recognise me, and once again, returning, it's Martin.
Oh.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back. It's been a while since I've done anything.
It has been a while, but we're back now and we're going to talk Survivor Series. And straight off the bat, I'm going to ask the question I always ask. Survivor Series, what did you think? Good, bad, yay, nay?
I thought it was fairly decent after reflection and some booking decisions being explained, but I still don't care for the men or women's Survivor Series matches.
Well, what we're going to do...
I was just going to say, because we've just had too many years of just Vince booking the hell out of Raw's dominate SmackDown, because it's the A show.
I'm sick of the brand supremacy. Like, you had most of Team Raw were literally on SmackDown weeks before. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's pointless. It's literally pointless. Like, Big E left New Day, stayed on SmackDown, they went to Raw. They were split up. One of the most famous groups and factions of the last 10 years split up. Literally weeks after, Big E's coming out with New Day for their tag title match. Like, already, that reunited. Like, literally weeks.
Yeah.
What's the point? How can you say that AJ Styles, who was on SmackDown mere weeks ago, is loyal to Raw, that he's willing... It doesn't make any sense. Same with Riddle. Right. What's the point?
Yeah. And Braun and Sheamus.
See, majority of that match were literally on the other show weeks before, and now they're fighting to gain supremacy. What's the point? Like, it doesn't work. Every year we get this. The only night these two shows clash. Drew was on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago, the week before he won the championship back from Orton. He was on the other show, so he didn't need to wait till Survivor Series to go up against and face Roman, because he went eye to eye Roman on SmackDown 2 weeks ago.
Yep, exactly.
So what's the point? So what we do, we're going to go through the matches and kind of throw in our comments along the way. In the pre-show, there was a dual brand 18-man battle royal won by The Miz, who eliminated Dominic Mysterio to win. Miz, I guess, makes sense that he wins, seeing as he has got Money in the Bank, and it's just to keep him familiar, if you want, I guess, in the eyes of people, just thinking, leaving that seed there that maybe championship there, and if no titles on the line tonight, but the champions are both in the ring, cashing could be there. So it makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. The only problem I had with it was the rehashing of the finish. Because obviously Miz got eliminated, didn't get eliminated, and then he got forgotten about, and then he came in and threw Miss Dominic out of the ring to win it.
There were a couple of notable absences from the Battle Royal. Big E and Lars Sullivan were not in the match. Rumour has it that Big E was kept out of it as he is being primed for a substantial push on SmackDown. They didn't want to be lost in the shuffle of a mid-card match or a pre-show match even. And Lars Sullivan is also getting a push on SmackDown, and they didn't want him to be sort of just wasted in a pre-show match. So they were kept out for I think fair reasons. If Big E's going to get a championship run, or at least a championship match down the line, we hope, it makes no sense to put him in a match where he's not going to win. He's going to be an afterthought. So, and same with, I don't necessarily agree with Lars Sullivan's push, but if you're going to push him, then don't put him in a match where he's not going to win.
Yeah. No, I'm on the same boat as you with Lars Sullivan. I don't know why they're pushing him, but never mind.
On the other hand, Aleister Black was not also or not on the Battle Royal, and rumour has it that he was not in it because he has no... There's no interest in him right now. Obviously, with Zelina Vega's recent departure and Black's reported request to go to NXT being turned down or ignored, Black is pretty much minimal prospects right now. He's not even being factored in. So I do wonder how long he's left for the WWE world. Sad as it is, because the guy is a talent and a good size.
Oh, yeah.
He appears to be a Vince guy based on his look. But... Mm. For whatever reason, Alice is on the outs, and it looks like that's not going to change anytime soon.
No.
Right, on to the main card, opening with the 5-on-5 Men's Survivor Series Elimination Match. On Team Raw was self-appointed Captain AJ Styles, Keith Lee, Sheamus, Braun Strowman, and the no longer Matt Riddle, against SmackDown's team of Kevin Owens, Jey Uso, King Corbin, Seth Rollins, and Otis. The teams, SmackDown's was decidedly B team, with all due respect to Owens and Rollins, and obviously Uso is getting the main event push with the Roman stuff. King Corbin, Otis, really?
Yeah, exactly. Surely they had other people they could have used instead of them.
I mean, again, Big E, I mean, even if he's not going to win the match, find a way to get him out.
Yeah.
But if SmackDown's going to put their best five forward, is Otis one of the best five? Is King Corbin one of the best five?
Definitely not.
You look on Team Raw, AJ, main event player. Sheamus, always around that position, upper mid-card main event if he needs to be. Strowman, former Universe Champion this year. Riddle, getting a push from what we hear. You know, Vince likes him. Keith Lee has been pretty high up ever since he debuted. So that's a good cast of characters for Team Raw, where SmackDown is not as good. And the match started straight away with Seth Rollins, who wasn't wearing the SmackDown shirt, unlike the rest of his team, sacrificed himself for the greater good and got bro kicked and eliminated straight away. So Seth was out, and it looks like Seth is now off TV for a little while to go be a daddy.
Yeah. Whether, I don't know, they come up with that finish, just sort of simply go, he was in the match, you know, it's minimal chance of him getting hurt or whatever.
I think that's exactly it. Yeah. I think, because obviously in the last 2 weeks, they've done Seth and Mysterio to pay that story off, and they've done Seth versus Murphy to pay that story off, and Seth's taken losses both times. So they've quickly written off his angles, and now they've thrown him out of this match quickly as well. He's now done. He can now go and be with Becky when she has a baby imminently, and he can come back whenever he's able to, and they can factor in a new story to bring him back in.
Yeah,
it was what it was with that. I mean... Yeah.
I think early talk is he's probably going to be back some point in January, apparently.
Okay, so it could be a Rumble surprise then, possibly.
Yeah.
For the rest of the match, Owens got a bit of a run. Stunners to everyone before being eliminated. It's hard to get enthused about stuff like this because you can't believe the brand supremacy. There were guys in there that deserve better than being stuck with this. And the match wasn't great, for me at least. And it's just hard to kind of, yeah.
Yeah, obviously you had a Riddle get payback on Corbin by eliminating him.
And I don't get, I mean, I'm not a huge hater of Corbin like a lot of people are, but he needs a break from the spotlight. He needs a break from me.
Yeah, I mean, I liked him in NXT, and then obviously they gave him the briefcase and all that, and I was like, right, okay, this is the time to sort of, you know, invest in him, give him that push, and they just did nothing with him, shat all over him, and then did nothing with him for, what, at least a year? And then all of a sudden they brought him back into the limelight, and it was sort of like, all of a sudden, oh yeah, you've got to give a shit about this guy again, and it was just be like, really? You've destroyed him.
Yeah. Team Raw picked up the win. Again, that Raw dominance is always really there, isn't it? Over the years.
Yeah, and it was brought up as well at some point. I can't remember if it was on Raw or whether it was actually during the night. Each team member from Raw got an elimination as well.
Yes, they did. Yeah, as you said off at the top of the show, you weren't I wasn't a fan of this match really. The work was okay. I said I like a lot of the guys in the match, but the whole concept for me has to change for Survivor Series next year.
Yeah,
this doesn't work.
Yeah.
Okay. Up next, champions versus champions. Raw Tag Team Champions New Day against SmackDown Tag Team Champions The Street Profits. I really enjoyed this one.
Yes, I enjoyed this one as well. And yeah, obviously they're both sort of faces, and yeah, it was sort of like sort of funny seeing New Day sort of like being like the, you know, the confident, almost heelish, you know, veterans and that.
Yeah, and they played that role well because people believe them in that role because they have been around for so long and they're established and believable, so it works. And you got them almost like the upstart younger guys in the Profits, who, you know, on this night were just that little bit better than the vets, and it worked for me. And it sort of, it leaves things open. I'm still not fully sold on the Street Profits. I don't know what it is about them, but I'm still not fully sold on them.
I like them, but I can't help but feel this is sort of like WWE trying to sort of like make up for Crime Time a bit all them years ago, and sort of making them a bit more of a likable sort of Crime Time-esque tag team.
Possible. Yeah, especially with Shad Gaspard, obviously, this year.
Yeah, but you know, no, I like both of them, and obviously New Day got their cheap plug-in with them coming down to their ring gear with their Gears of War attire.
They did, yes. Actually, I did like that.
Yeah, I liked how Xavier Woods actually announced that on Twitter. He was just like, yeah, somehow we talked Microsoft into letting us be DLC content on Gears of War.
I just want to just quickly, I just literally thought as we moved on from the opener, that the five and five men's. Jey Uso, obviously he's getting a push with the Roman stuff at the moment. I did like how they used that five and five with him being ganged up on at the end to kind of feed into that story of Roman more. So,
yes.
Kind of Roman as the tribal chief of SmackDown may have a vested interest in a match where SmackDown's, you know, name is on the line, as it were. And Jey is that bloodline kind of representing the family and almost like striving not to let Roman down and fighting for the family. And I like that they can tie that story in if they want to. So this coming week on SmackDown, if they want to tie in with Roman being disappointed in Jey for not winning the match, there's something there they can go with that.
I think they actually did briefly touch on that during a backstage segment with the three of them, because Heyman was there, and yeah, I think sort of Roman sort of looked at him and sort of said, you know, you didn't get the job done. You should have done your job and all that.
Okay, yeah. Right, so up next, we had another champion versus champion match. The US champion, Bobby Lashley, up against Intercontinental champion, Sami Zayn. Match was what it was. I don't think these two ever really worked well together.
No, they didn't. plus as well, obviously, I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm not Bobby Lashley's biggest fan of that. And as well, at the same time, it sort of like didn't make sense with having the whole of the Hurt Business ringside as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you had Sammy's sort of comical moments where he was like trying to intentionally get him disqualified and that. But yeah, like you said, for me, their two styles just didn't work well together.
Mm-hmm. Well, up next, another champion versus champion match. It was Raw Women's Champion Asuka against SmackDown Women's Champion Sasha Banks. Sasha's on a bit of a tear now since winning the belt from Bayley recently, and now Sasha's kind of winning matches, which she doesn't usually do as champion.
No. I say I fairly enjoyed this match. I thought it was quite good. For me, it sort of became a bit predictable earlier, Sean, which way they were going to go with the winner.
Let's be honest, Asuka's done nothing since Becky gave her the belt. Like, nothing.
No.
What does she mean? She doesn't have any kind of... You look at what Becky got. Becky got consistently focal point of the show, heavily promoted feuds, was always visible. Asuka you don't, you know, she doesn't get anything. Like, she's not getting memorable feuds, not getting major focus. Like, no. Sasha was the biggest one here, because obviously Sasha's recently had the Mandalorian guest spot, which has got mainstream attention. She's won the belt, obviously coming off the huge, the long gestating feud with Bayley. Sasha's the big one in this match. Asuka was just, the other champion.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot as well, because, like, essentially on Raw, the women's tag champions are overshadowing Asuka.
Yeah, and those belts have been ignored for, well, most of their existence. I don't know, ever since Becky left, it's almost like the minute she walked out the door, she took the entire women's division kind of creativity focus with her. Like, they don't care about the women anymore. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I think, to be fair as well, if you don't look too much into it, I think essentially Asuka's just holding the title until Charlotte comes back, and then Vince can just shove Charlotte down our throats for a few months.
That's how it feels. Yeah, it feels she's keeping it warm for Charlotte to have another reign. I don't know how many that'll be, but that's what it feels like she's doing.
10 or 11, I think it'll be. Oh,
Jesus Christ. Okay, sticking with the women. 5-5 Women's Survivor Series Elimination Match. Team Raw against Team SmackDown. On Team Raw, it was, of course, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, the Women's Tag Team Champions, Lana, Lacey Evans, and Peyton Royce, taking on Team SmackDown of Bianca Belair, Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan, Natalya, and former Women's Champion Bayley. The story really coming into this was Lana's table exploits at the hand of Nia Jax. That was pretty much your main story, really, is how will Team Raw coexist? How will Lana get on with her team? Story, the answer to that is not very well. She was banished for most of the match. And yet she ended up being the sole survivor.
Yeah. Again, I wasn't a huge fan of this. I got the feeling that they slightly crapped all over Team SmackDown a bit unfairly. Obviously, I think they should be doing a bit more to, you know, build up the likes of Bianca Belair. And it's just all like, you know, they were just there. Sort of like fill a spot. They didn't actually really want them to do anything.
No, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, and I don't know, maybe actually try putting a bit of effort into the Riott squad, because despite everything, I don't mind Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott, but they just don't seem to be invested in them at all, really. You know, they're just there to make up the numbers.
Same. No, absolutely. The result with Lana being the sole survivor almost by accident in you know, the way they, which was quite a creative finish, I'll give them that. Yeah. It led to some speculation regarding a talked about Rumble finish. I don't know if you've heard about this. Apparently, most years, the idea gets brought up regarding someone winning the Rumble that the last two guys in the ring before number 30 comes out eliminate each other. So then when the 30th entrant comes out, they win the Rumble by default because there's no one else in the ring.
Okay.
It's genius, and apparently it's always been talked about, but they've never had a guy that they can give that finish to.
Yeah, but
the thought of that, with one more man to go, the last two in the ring eliminate each other and the ring is empty, and then number 30 strolls out and he's already won because there's no one else in the ring. It's a really creative finish for me, but that's a finish you give like a lucky heel or like a comedy character. That's not a finish that a Steve Austin or a Randy Orton or an Undertaker or any of the Rumble winners that you look at. Rumble winners tend to be main eventers or main eventers in waiting, and you don't give that launch pad of that push. Can you imagine last year or this year, back in January, instead of Drew eliminating Brock early on, then going through and Rowan, all the people he eliminated, can you imagine if he didn't do any of that and he just walked out after Edge and Orton or whatever eliminated each other? That's not a push. Like, Drew wins nothing from that. He's just, well, he's a lucky champ. He's a lucky winner. He happened to draw number 30.
Yeah.
So it's a great idea, but I don't think it's ever going to work because it doesn't make your main event in waiting look very good.
No. And the problem is that has got Lana written all over it. But then in the lightest of respects, she's passable in the ring, but she's never going to be a main eventer.
Now, they could give that to Lana at the Rumble, because the women don't main event next year, obviously, because Becky's not around. So Lana could, I mean, just for example, to think of this. So Lana's on the outside of the ring. Nia puts her through a table. Lana's out. In the ring, you got two more women. They fight. They go over the top rope together. They're eliminated. Oh, the mat, it's a draw. Oh, wait. If you do Lana early, you forget about her. So you then have, say, Nia and Shayna, whatever, in the ring, having a fight. Lock a submission. They try and fight. They go over the rope. The referee's like, it's a draw. We do like a Cena Batista kind of a booyah kind of thing. And all of a sudden, Lana gets up, slowly rolls into the ring. And then you realize, wait, Lana's the last person in the ring. Now, she, even though she's supposed to be a sympathetic babyface, because she's had that hard luck story, she's getting like a slicer luck. So she takes the table bump. So she still gets beat down, but she gets that lucky kind of bounce that, wait, like, because she was put through a table and she wasn't eliminated, she actually wins. And it's not wasted on someone who doesn't gain from it. Lana, for me, works in that role. So you could run that angle. You could run that finish at Rumble next year for Lana, and I don't think it'd be out of place.
No, definitely not. The only problem would be is how do you build her up against, like, for argument's sake, Charlotte or Sasha?
To be honest, she could lose the shot between Rumble and Mania. You could put her against Charlotte. Tell you what, if Asuka's still the champion come Mania, or come Rumble at least, and Asuka beats whoever and retains the belt, and Lana wins, and they start building Asuka versus Lana for Mania, whatever, you could have Charlotte, because it's face versus face, you could have Charlotte then get a match with Lana at whatever the... Is it nowhere in February? Whatever the February show. Yeah. Elimination Chamber.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You could have Lana put her shot on the line in the chamber. You could have Charlotte get her into a one-on-one match where the winner gets the shot or whatever. So you don't have to have Lana go to Mania as the number one contender, but she could still get that position by having that fluke finish in the Rumble.
Yeah.
That could be. It uses it up, but it doesn't waste it on someone who actually loses something with that kind of finish.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
right. Main event, at least in ring main event. Oh, what a bunch. This was everything it could have been and then some. Drew McIntyre against Roman Reigns, Tribal Chief against the Scottish Claymore. This was the closest thing the company has to a dream match at the moment between two guys who you've never really seen fight, who have always been kept apart, who are doing the best work of their career right now, who are on top of their respective brands. And this promised so much. And for me, it smashed expectations. And I'll go as far to say the fact, they maybe give it away too early, but it doesn't matter, because you could go back to this in Mania next April and it would still be as good, if not better.
Yeah.
Amazing. This was incredible. I loved every minute of this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the match as well, and you even had like the spots of like, you know, them kicking out of one another's finishes and that as well.
Yep, it was brilliant. It was so good. It really was.
Yeah, really good. And hopefully they do go back to this in the not so distant future.
It all depends. I mean, I think we can both agree they're not getting The Rock for Mania, let's be honest. No. Insurance, schedule, if there's no fans as well, The Rock had come back for no fans. So he's not working there. He's not working the Thunderdome in a stadium. He's not working Mania with no crowd.
No,
so definitely. Maybe if Big E is not going to be the option, as a lot of people want him to be, then maybe you go, if you can get back to Drew versus Roman organically and not be it forced, and that would mean Drew not being the champion, realistically, and somehow getting into smack, whether he wins the Rumble and chooses Roman as his champion to challenge, I don't know. I mean, right now you look at that roster, can you see a Rumble winner in there? Because I can't. Not really.
No, not really.
I mean, Shinsuke won that year because he was the best of everyone else that was left. are we going to get a similar this next year where there's no concrete, he is the guy that has to win it, so who's the best that's left? With all due respect to Shinsuke, but that's how it felt that year when he won it.
Yeah.
Could we get that that Drew will repeat his win because they want him to win the bet in front of fans, because they want to get back to Drew versus Roman, because there's no one else? I mean, that means Drew dropping the belt, and I don't think Drew should be dropping the belt anytime soon. But equally, no. I don't want Drew to be dropping the belt at Mania, because babyfaces don't lose titles at Mania, traditionally. No. So at some point, Drew's got to drop that belt. And then he could then move on to Roman and we get a repeat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of options but for possible Rumble winners, but no one that, you know, generally jumps out and, you know, yes, he has to win it. I mean, you could maybe make an argument just purely because he's never won it before. You know, AJ, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see AJ main eventing Mania, or even if it's a semi-main. Right. Yeah, if they give the main event to, well, God knows what, but even if AJ got a total shot on the opener, then maybe that could work.
Yeah, the impending rumors about, you know, Edge will come back around Rumble time and maybe he'll win it, but
if Noah Orton's not the champion, I don't see that happening. And I know there's talk about Edge versus Fiend, but that doesn't feel like, that means Fiend holding the belt. And as much as I love the Fiend character and I adore the Fiend character, he doesn't need to be a champion.
No, he's very much like Taker. You know, he's a big time player, but he doesn't need to be revolved around the title.
And coming off, and we'll get to it shortly, but coming off of Raw, it looks like Fiend versus Orton is the next feud up. So that kind of keeps Fiend busy while Drew does his stuff with whoever it's going to be. Now, that could lead to Fiend versus Drew for the belt at Rumble, but Fiend, it looks like, is a babyface, as is Drew, obviously. Do you really want to put Drew over babyface Fiend, or even put face Fiend over face Drew? It doesn't. That doesn't really work.
It's a bit of a fucking nightmare, really.
It is a little bit, but no. This match was everything and then some. It was great. Roman, for years we've been saying Roman is the frustration with Roman was never him per se. It was how he was presented and how he was handled.
Yeah,
definitely. And now that he, with Heyman, kind of they're booking their own stuff, and Roman is open to doing everything, and they're tapping into Roman now. Oh God, are we getting the benefits? I mean, hands down, and you can take your AEW marks, you can take all your demo gods and everything else, your MJFs. Roman is, for me, the most intriguing, captivating, best character in the business right now.
Yeah. Without a doubt. The only thing I wish they would do, apparently it's all ready to go, but they're waiting for the right moment. They need to introduce new music for him. We need to, like, fully 100% get away from the Shield era. Yeah,
absolutely. It needs that final part, and I think once that final part comes in, that'll work. That'll do it.
Yeah. Apparently, they've already recorded a new theme song for him and everything. They're just waiting for the right moment to introduce it.
Okay. And what do you think of the submission winning the match and not a pinfall?
I liked it personally because obviously, I mean, Drew could take the loss anyway and it not really affect him. But it's a bit like with like Austin style booking. You know, he's a tough bastard, but you know he. Even though he lost, he didn't actually, you know, submit or anything. He was just choked out unconscious.
Exactly. At this point in time, Drew can take the loss, whether it be pinfall, submission or whatever. Roman can't really lose at the moment. I don't think he can lose right now. And you don't do a draw. You don't do a shitty ending. You have to deliver a winner. And they did. So as far as the Drew and Roman match concerned, 5 stars for me. It was brilliant. It did everything it was supposed to do, and it gave us a tease of what we could get in future.
Yeah, definitely. 100% agree.
Okay, the main event segment and what the show was built around primarily was the final farewell after 30 years in a career of The Undertaker. 30 years after making his debut at Survivor Series 1990, we come here with all the ups and downs and manias and the losses and the Saudi Arabias and everything else in between. Undertaker was going to finally say farewell. They brought in a bunch of legends to commemorate and celebrate. You had BSK, so you had Savio Vega and the Godwins and the Godfather. Booker T was there. You had other legends like Mick Foley, Kevin Nash. Jeff Hardy was also, obviously he was in the Battle Royal anyway. Jeff Hardy was there. You had
Big Show
was in there as well. Shane McMahon was there. Where did the legends go? Like, they came, was there, Kane was in full gimmick costume here. They came out and then just went. Like, what was, could just stand on the stage then while Taker walks through them? Like, I don't really understand that.
Yeah, that part was a bit confusing. You know, why introduce them all and then just basically have them disappear as soon as Taker turned up? Obviously, there was a post later after the show where Michelle and Taker's daughter was in the crowd and that with the legends behind and whatnot, watching him say his swan song.
Did you expect a gimmicked Undertaker as we got, or did you expect Mark Calloway to say something? What Taker did you expect to see there? Here?
The problem here is, obviously, as we're recording this now, I've watched the Austin podcast, the one last round one, and I think initially before I saw that I was probably expecting a bit of both, but then after watching the Austin one it was just like no, you know, he probably did it about right as he could, you know, just full on Taker and, you know, keeping the kayfabe up and everything else. And yeah, I wasn't quite sure what I was gonna get exactly, but yeah, sort of it was probably the most Taker-esque goodbye you could have him say, probably.
I enjoyed the segment. I think it did what it needed to. It said goodbye. I think we've said on many podcasts before, this was the time to go. Well, he already had his time to go, but this was it. It was fitting that it was Survivor Series. He didn't need to go out as in a match or on his back or whatever. He got to go out on relatively his own terms. And oh, the Paul Bearer hologram becomes one of my favorite moments ever. Yeah, Whoever thought of that, kudos.
That was good. And obviously as well, like right before Taker came out, obviously you had Vince come out and have a little say on Taker.
It wouldn't be right if Vince didn't introduce him. It just wouldn't be right.
No, and I'll give him his dues. There was a couple of times where he saw, like, trying to fight back the tears and emotions.
I did sense that, yes. There was a few times where he was a little bit choked up. And I think he had to just compose himself.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so that's Survivor Series. It was a good show. I know on our group chat outside of the podcast, Ed suggested that Vince was so tied up with the Undertaker stuff that did he just forget the rest of the roster and let him do whatever they wanted to, really?
Yeah.
And it did feel a bit like that.
Yeah, it did. And as I say, like we've said, it wasn't a terrible event by any standards. That I just didn't care for the men and women Survivor matches, but all the rest of it was fairly decent.
I do just want to see, basically it's just a bit of a behind the curtain. Whenever there's a show on our group chat, Ed will kind of, will obviously come back a bit later after he's watched the show the following day, and he'll give us like a rundown of his opinions. I just want to go through a few of them because they kind of, I think, sum up a lot of what we felt about the show generally. He felt that Sasha versus Asuka was exactly as it should have been. Sasha couldn't beat Asuka clean all year and then just did just that by eking out a rare mistake from Asuka. Couldn't win off submission because it does make Asuka look weak. And Sasha doesn't have like a knockout finisher, but they need to cement her as that new champion who does successfully win matches. So that worked. He said of the Women's Survivor Series match, Peyton got a massive upset to kind of help her push along. Bianca, via sort of schmozzes, but Bianca eliminated the tag champs by herself. and Lana gets that push as like a baby face and that sympathetic baby face. So that worked as well. He said what we did about Uso, Jey Uso being ganged up and at the end in the 5-on-1 ties into the Roman match as well. Really, really well. New Day and Profits was a bit predictable, but still really, really good. The veterans, New Day, underestimating the Profits at times and playing almost like that underlying heel, like you mentioned. And the wrestling itself was really, really good. And Drew and Roman was a banger, in his words. The ending worked really well with the story they're trying to tell. And as we said again, Drew can take the loss, but it wasn't clean in the sense of a pinfall. So it was as good a finish as it could have been. Ed thinks it was a pretty much a perfectly booked show. Didn't really disagree with any moments or the results or anything. So from his point of view, at least, fully thumbs up.
Yes, indeedy.
So that was Survivor Series. Moving on to Monday Night Raw now. So coming off of that, now, first things first, Drew McIntyre was not at Raw last night, as we record this. He got given the night off. So the focus instead was, on who is going to be his next challenger. So we opened the show with Team Raw from the previous night all in the ring, and then self-appointed, it seems, official Adam Pearce, who's in charge, apparently now, said that one of the men in the ring would get a championship match. So he gave them all matches to win, to qualify for a triple threat match next week. So that was setting up for later in the night. We open up in the ring with a tag team championship match between the New Day and Hurt Business, with Cedric and Shelton. There was a count out win initially, and then they resumed the match and New Day successfully retained their belts. I'm not sure about the Hurt Business losing twice here. It does, my concern is it's already, what, November? So they've only been on Raw for a few weeks. They've already beaten a fair few amount of challenges on Raw.
Yeah.
That's a concern.
Yeah, and I can't help but feel the Hurt Business are already getting booked the same as what Reckoning are. And they're meant to be like this big powerhouse and, you know.
Yeah, what's happened with Retribution? What has gone on with Retribution, eh?
Yeah, well, they weren't even on the show this week, were they?
I think they were. No, brilliant. Okay, so the first of the triple threat qualifiers, one-on-one match to qualify for next week, triple threat match to name the number one contender for Drew's championship. It was Sheamus versus the no longer Matt Riddle. Really good back and forth match, actually. Rare to see, and I didn't think it would go as long as this. Went 20 minutes, and Riddle got the win, which was equally surprising for me because Sheamus is usually quite protected.
Yeah, and obviously they as well, they were like hinting backstage and that about, you know, sort of basically a Battle of Britain almost. And I think, didn't they try playing up the whole, like, the Claymore sword that Drew had was like Sheamus's granddad's, even though we know it's actually Vince's sword?
That there's an intriguing story there with their past and everything and their long-term friendship. And I hope it does get explored further. And I do hope we get that match at some point, because I think it does have potential to be good. So fingers crossed. We're sticking within the ring because there was a fair few sort of out-ring incidents, but we'll stick within the ring. Asuka defended the women's championship against Lana. It went to a no contest when Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler got involved. Jax was going to put Asuka through a table, but Lana, ironically, actually rescued Alana and saved that table bump. It inevitably led to a tag team match, player, with Jax and Baszler against Asuka and Lana. Non-total, of course. Asuka pinned Baszler to win the match.
Yeah.
Carrying on, we had the second qualifier for next week's triple threat. Keith Lee taking on Bobby Lashley. Keith Lee got the win in about 12 minutes. Match was okay. Lee had to win the match and did. So we go on. So that means we've now got Riddle and Keith Lee in the match from later. The final match will be later on in the evening. Randy Orton taking on AJ Styles. Winner will take on Riddle and Lee in a triple threat next week. Alexa Bliss taking on Nikki Cross. Building up, of course, from Bliss's defection to The Fiend and the Firefly Funhouse, dissolving the partnership and the friendship with Nikki Cross. They had a match and Bliss won in about 4 minutes.
Yeah, she, despite Nikki Cross's best efforts, she got sucked into the mind games and you know, Alexa had sort of like snapped out of the Fiend's trance, and you know, she asked Nikki for her help, and she fell for it.
She did. Talking of the Fiend, he showed up in the main event of the evening, which was the aforementioned final qualifying match for next week's Triple Threat. It was AJ taking on Randy Orton. Was actually pretty good. These two do work well together. They've had a Mania match before, of course, and they're two of my favourite guys at the moment. There's always good chemistry with most of AJ's opponents, and same as Orton's right now. He's working better than he has done in years. The finish saw Fiend pop up behind Orton with the red lighting and everything go. Orton got distracted. AJ hit the forearm, and AJ goes on to next week's Triple Threat. So we have AJ versus Riddle versus Lee next week to name a number one contender. So yes, in amongst all of that, those three guys now being in that position, we still have, of course, Braun Strowman, who still wants a championship match. And speculation is, and rumor has it, that the current plan puts him against Drew at TLC. So I don't know whether we're going to get Braun interject himself into what become a four-way next week, or Braun will beat whoever wins the Triple Threat next week. But one way or another, it looks like Braun may get that shot. Not a fan myself. Right. I could do with Braun not being in the main event anytime soon for a championship. But if Drew wins that, as he probably should, then at least Drew can get that rub of knocking off a big man such as Braun Strowman.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have like a AJ or Keith Lee in the title picture. I think it's a little bit too early to chuck Riddle into that equation just yet, but yeah, I could do without Braun being in the picture.
All in all, actually a decent Raw, better than they have done recently. So we've had a good Survivor Series, a better than average Raw, and now SmackDown coming up later this week. We could actually have a good week of WWE.
We may be lucky enough to get that.
Fingers crossed, let's not count chickens before they hatch and all that. No. Yes, that was a little bonus episode for you. Survivor Series and Raw this week and recapping the events there. If you have any thoughts, good, bad, indifferent, towards Survivor Series and Raw as well, you can contact us and let us know those in normal ways on Facebook at Ring the Bell Show, on Twitter and Instagram at Ring the Bell Pod, and by email at ringthebellpod@gmail.com. You can also leave us a review, and if you feel we've earned it, a 5-star rating over Apple Podcasts. And you can also subscribe or recommend us anywhere, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, anywhere you can get your shows. We are everywhere that we can be. In closing, Martin, anything else to add?
Not hugely, apart from what's sort of already been highlighted, you know, an encouraging week for WWE television, which is a rarity.
Let's see if they can carry that on this coming Friday on SmackDown. And one more reminder for our regular listeners, this coming weekend, you will get part one of our Undertaker trilogy. We will, myself and Ross will start by looking at Undertaker's debut up until the end of 2000, and so up to the end of 1999, just before he becomes the American Badass. So we get the first 10 years of Taker's career. That's coming up this weekend. But for now, thank you for listening to this bonus episode. This has been Survivor Series and Monday Night Raw. This has been Ring the Bell, and I've been Andrew.
I've been Martin. Andrew.
Yes?
Ring that bell.